call the Joint Interim Committee on Emergency Preparedness to order on December the 21st, Thursday, 2006. 11 o'clock conference call with a quorum of the committee to look at the introduction of committee bills. Prior to that, there has been some discussion of the full aid that is established under LC 630, and I wonder if we could get some response from the Director of Emergency Management on that.
For the record, my name is Ken Murphy, the Director of Oregon Emergency Management, and good morning, and hopefully you can all hear me. The LC on 630 does talk about mutual aid, and it also addresses reimbursement, which is a choice between jurisdictions. It's not mandatory, and even without this legislation, a sheriff during search and rescue can ask for resources literally from anywhere in the country or any other state if they so choose. The mutual aid, the LC 630, pretty much more formalizes it and gives a little bit more detailed rules and tries to answer the questions of liability and indemnification and those type issues, and to work out these issues before the need is actually arisen, so that when the need does arise, the people can move to the place that it's needed without any questions or problems.
Judith, I wonder if you would give us a summary of LC 630.
She's on her way back to the podium. Give her 1 minute here, please.
Thank you.
Moving around microphones, so I'm hoping, can everyone hear Director Murphy and everyone in the room? Can everyone hear the comments?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. With respect to LC 630, Madam Chair and members, LC 630 establishes a framework for local governments to request and receive mutual assistance from other local governments. You should have before you the LC draft dated October the 24th. That does find that it is beneficial to create a system of interstate mutual assistance. It allows a local government, once it declares an emergency, to request assistance from other local participating local governments. Pardon me. It does have the responding local government provide all practicable assistance to respond to the emergency. It would allow the local government that's responding to withhold resources to the extent necessary to protect its own citizens and provide reasonable levels of services in their own jurisdiction. The measure would specify that emergency service workers, as well as non-consumable material resources, are under the operational control of the requesting local government for strategic and tactical purposes, but it allows the responding local government to have direct command and control of those workers with respect to such things as medical protocols that would normally apply in their own jurisdiction in order to accomplish those strategic and tactical goals. It does allow the initial request to be made orally or in writing, with a follow-up if it is an oral request for a written request as soon as that's practicable. The measure would not require that request be made through the Oregon Office of Emergency Management. However, it does require a written notice to OEM once that request has been made. Section 5 of the LC draft, starting on page 3, provides that if a person responding holds a license, certificate, or other permit that's issued by a state or local government, in their own jurisdiction, that transfers and applies when those folks are responding in another jurisdiction. The Office of Emergency Management is designated as the requesting local government for purposes of training and any kind of running of exercises or tests. But it does not require OEM, however, to reimburse local jurisdictions for the costs of participating in that training. And that training would be, you'll see shortly, there is a committee formed that would deliberate what the appropriate levels of training and that sort of thing shall be. Section 6 is allowing a local government, however, to, it would require the requesting local government to reimburse those responding local governments for the costs of rendering their assistance. Any disputes regarding reimbursement would be either worked out between the local governments within 90 days or else it does allow for arbitration of the dispute under the commercial arbitration rules. Section 7 deals with in the event that workers are injured or in fact killed in their duties of providing assistance, they are eligible for all applicable benefits that they would normally have available to them if they were performing those duties in their own jurisdiction, as well as any additional state or federal benefits that may be allowed for that loss.
Judith?
Yes.
Could you just kind of summarize?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I will be more brief here. Yes, Section 9 talks about a local government participating would be automatically considered to be participating unless they, in fact, elect specifically not to participate in the mutual assistance program by virtue of a resolution or ordinance. And Section 10 then talks about the committee I mentioned earlier. That is, they would create an Oregon Interstate Mutual Assistance Committee to formulate such things as training guidelines, record keeping, a schedule for training and exercises and testing, and in fact to prepare an annual report to back to the legislature as well as the governor with respect to the effectiveness of the program and any recommendations for correcting deficiencies. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, one more second. Could I ask a question?
I'm going to recognize Representative Boquist, and then we'll go to discussion.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'd like to move that LC 630 be adopted by the committee and referred to the next general session.
Representative Boquist moves that LC Draft 630 be introduced as a committee bill for pre-session filing. Is there any discussion?
Yes.
Representative Senator Marcet.
Yeah. This may not be a point, but what about local jurisdictions or special districts, I should say? For instance, the Indian Water Electric Board is a local government, a nonprofit. Well, it's a public corporation. Does have a board. And if they've had some problems with outages, any special district, according to this, of course, they're not even mentioned, but I guess they would come under the jurisdiction of the county, which may or may not be willing to recognize them in terms of assistance.
But they are classified as a local government.
Well, it mentioned specifically on... Peter County is the only one...
Only ones mentioned.
Mentioned on...
Right.
Page 2, line... page 3...
Senator Carter, do you have any comment to make on that?
No, I was going to ask Representative Smith and Senator Metzger's concerned about the training piece. in terms of local jurisdiction. And the question becomes, so we can't mandate, how can we integrate the thoughts and ideas into the cost of doing this? Because I think that that becomes a sustainable issue, even though let's get a fixed and people choose not to wear a GPS. It doesn't get the choice for them. It cuts down on our costs. That kind of stuff happens, but if they choose not to do it, back to your point, no. Madam Chair, then I think that the jurisdiction has to make it.
And we'll know which one is going to be moving.
Might I suggest that we pass the bill out as a committee bill for pre-session filing and take note of these things that we have concerns about, that they might be interjected in the process during the session as the bill goes through? Would there be any objection to that?
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, I really don't have any objections, but I think Senator Carter's made a good point, and it needs a whole lot more discussion. And I would also, for the record, have issues with local jurisdictions becoming part of the network by doing nothing rather than doing something proactive to become part of it. I think that's something we need to have a discussion on.
Okay. If there is no objection to the motion, do I hear any objection to the motion that LC Draft 630 be introduced as committee bill for pre-session filing? If not, the motion carries. LC Draft 630 will be introduced as a committee bill. All right. Next on the agenda is LC 1894. Encourages the City of Portland and the Port of Portland to contract to locate the USS Ranger in the area. This is the draft that follows up on the hearing that we had when the two gentlemen came from the USS Ranger. So, Judith, would you like to add anything to that?
No, Madam Chair. You summarized that very well, and it is just supporting the location in the Portland metropolitan area and encouraging a minimum of a 40-year lease with the USS Ranger Museum Foundation.
All right. I recognize Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'd like to move LC 1894 be adopted by the committee and referred to the next general session.
Thank you. Representative Boquist moves that LC Draft 1894 be introduced as a committee bill for pre-session filing. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, this is Greg McPherson.
Yes.
I missed the hearing in which we heard about this issue in committee, but if I could get a very brief explanation as to how this resolution relates to our task of emergency preparedness, that might be more comfortable with what seems like it's a little bit off topic.
Okay, Judith, can you explain why the USS Ranger issue came before this committee?
Certainly, Madam Chair, Representative McPherson. The USS Ranger Museum Foundation came before the committee to offer basically the services of the aircraft and describe for us the capabilities that the aircraft would have as a disaster command center and relief center. If you look on the first page of the resolution starting on line 9, you can see that two hospitals, a dental clinic, facilities for training, just the ability to be a relief center to hold a lot of beds in case we needed to evacuate folks and have them have shelter. So it was partly and mainly before this committee, actually, because of its capabilities as an emergency response center and resource for the community and the region. And the fact that if you'll see on page 2 of the resolution, starting on line 8, the practical purposes, and that would be the fact that this is one of the few locations in the Pacific Northwest where there is piers that are accessible based on water depth and bridge clearance and that sort of thing. And that's why it came as a request before this body.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if I might interject a little bit, to Representative McPherson, there are a lot of things up there. The benefits of having this important that have nothing to do with emergency management, but I think a really valid point was they said in their report to us that, for example, if there was like a 6.5 earthquake in Portland, the ship would remain untouched.
Right.
So where everything else might be falling down, we would have a secure place for a logistical place, and plus the fact that it can hold 20,000 people, and it also can hold 5.5 million gallons of potable water. So I think the advantages to Portland in having this just on the emergency side are huge, and then there are also all sorts of other benefits to this being in Portland.
Okay, that's sufficient for me. I just wanted to get a little background as to why this was before us.
All right. Representative Boquist has moved that LC Draft 1894 be pre-session filed as a committee bill. Are there any objections? If not, the motion carries, and LC Draft 1894 will be introduced as a committee bill. Next on the agenda, and a very important bill, is LC 1296, which proposes a revision to the Oregon Constitution to authorize the governor and the Legislative Assembly to take action during a disaster. Judith, would you summarize for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will briefly try my best at briefly summarizing. This would propose a revision to the Oregon Constitution and authorize the governor and the Legislative Assembly to take certain actions once that declaration has been made. Because this would revise the Constitution, it is a referral to the people for their approval or rejection at the next primary election. Section 1 defines what a catastrophic disaster includes. And just based on our last discussion, I'll point out we did not end up adding fire to that list because it was assumed that if something were that catastrophic, it would qualify under the other conditions in the definition. I want to point out on page 2, subsection 4 is a new section that was added by the co-chairs after our last committee discussion, and that was this is requiring the governor to call the Legislative Assembly into session to deal once he has declared a catastrophic disaster, unless the Assembly is either already meeting or is scheduled to meet within the next 30 days.
Judith, yes. I want to just interject that at the time that we had that discussion, if you remember, we said that everyone who could should head for Salem or the appropriate place. But the co-chairs were more comfortable with requiring that the governor issue the proclamation convening the Legislative Assembly, and not anyone being given a choice. That would be just the way it was. All right, continue, Judith.
Section 3 allows the legislature to meet in a place other than the Capitol, and this is the section that specifies that two-thirds of the members of each house who are able to attend is what will constitute a quorum for all of these provisions. You will also find, though, that three-fifths of that body that can and is able to assemble would be required for votes to raise revenue. You'll note, I wanted to point out on page 3, lines 30 and 31, we're adding language that says that the Legislative Assembly may declare an emergency, put an emergency clause on a bill regulating taxation and exemption. And it's clarifying that that would also include decreases in taxes, suspension of taxes, or postponement of due dates of those tax collections. Section 4 deals with the Legislative Assembly's powers in enacting laws to use revenues during a catastrophic disaster, appropriate monies that would have otherwise been returned to the taxpayers, and and or lend credit of the state and create debts and liabilities in response to the citizens' needs. On page 4, starting on line 18 through 25, is new language that basically clarifies that 3/5 of those able to attend would be required to, for example, do anything that three-fifths of a vote is required for now, such as requiring a local government to establish new programs, provide service levels, that sort of thing. I will point out here that there was a deletion. We've deleted a reference right here that to property imposing property taxes, so that language is now out of this December 12th draft. And finally, Section 5 deals with when the catastrophic disaster is over and when the provisions of this measure would cease to be in effect, and that specifies that that happens when the governor finds that we've moved from the immediate response to the disaster, we're in the recovery phase, the Legislative Assembly must agree with that finding and provide for, it allows them to provide for an orderly transition back to current,
Well, it would go back to the requirements of the Constitution.
Exactly right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, Judith. That is the summary, and I will recognize Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'd like to move that LC 1296 be adopted as a committee bill and referred to the next general session.
Thank you. Representative Boquist moves that LC Draft 1296, dated 12-12-06, be introduced as a committee bill for pre-session filing. Is there any discussion?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Cruz here. I want to thank the co-chairs for making the changes in the bill. I'm a lot more comfortable with it now.
Good. Any other discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the motion carries, and LC Draft 1296, dated 12-12-06, will be introduced as a committee bill for pre-session filing. All right. That ends our agenda that we have for today, and I really want to thank all of you that have taken time on 21st of December to answer a conference call so that we can get this business taken care of. I think that we'll all be glad to have a pre-session file and in the pipeline ready for some good discussion during the session. And I want to wish all of you a very happy holiday and a very peaceful and safe Christmas. And are there any other comments by members on the phone?
Yeah, Madam Co-Chair, Representative Boquist. Madam Co-Chair, I'd like to just take the moment as the outgoing co-chair to thank Judith for all of her hard work during the interim session. I don't think I could have done it without her, especially with my tardiness most of the time. Secondly, I would like to thank you, Madam Co-Chair, for your esteemed guidance multiple times to a near freshman member who was your co-chair. And lastly, I would like to thank all the committee members for their hard work during this session. And I'd also like to pass on to the incoming co-chair, Representative Boone, that if she needs some help, she has a lot of committee members that are returning. Besides, I'm not returning, but other committee members, and that she could reach out to them as the discussion goes forward in the beginning of the next session pertaining to the bills we're referring to it. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other comments?
Why are you not returning?
Madam Chair, I'd like to say something, Representative Smith.
Yes, Representative Smith.
Oh, thank you, Senator Berger. I want to thank you and Representative Boquist and Debbie Bloom, Representative Bloom, for exemplary actions on behalf of the state of Oregon. Thank you for allowing me to participate and have a lot of natural disasters in this state, but particularly in my district, we seem to have more than our fair share. So I thank you for coming out there. And anything, I would like to invite this committee to come the area and again listen to all the. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Smith. And, you know, I think that your district does have a number of disasters, and we will be doing some traveling and getting out of the Capitol, and we need to consider your invitation, and I appreciate it very much. Any discussion?
Could you please let Representative Boquist tell me why isn't he? I didn't know he was not returning.
Carter, we are all very distressed about that.
Yeah.
I made one phone call about it so far. I would like to make more. If there's anything that you can do that might change that, I certainly, as a co-chair, would be very appreciative of that. Representative Boquist has added a tremendous amount, and he's very full of humility when he talks about being a freshman member of this committee. He is knowledgeable, and he comes with a professional attitude that will be very difficult to replace. And we're all, many of us, are very distressed that he is not a member of this committee during the legislative session.
Madam Co-Chair, it's Debbie Boone.
Yes.
I would like the entire committee to return, and would urge any of you who would like to consider that appointment, if you weren't given it as such, to let me know, and I'm happy to advocate on your behalf to both Representative Smith and Representative Boquist, and I know Representative McPherson was there too, and so I don't have the list in front of me right now, but I am willing to make calls on behalf of anyone who would like to return, because I think we were all making great headway, and it was an important agenda we're not quite finished with. So let me know, and maybe we can enlarge our committee.
Thank you, Representative. I also hope that you would perhaps agree that if we're unable to make the changes that we really feel are necessary, that the dais would be open, particularly to Representative Boquist and Representative Smith, who might like to participate in those discussions.
Absolutely.
The participation in the discussion is equally or more important many times than the vote. And so the fact that you don't have a vote doesn't mean a lot. I sat in on the Economic Development Committee many times, even through Ways and Means, and I was very happy to be there and very welcome at the dais. And so I hope that those of you who are not going to be returning to the committee would feel very welcome. In fact, I encourage you to come and participate in the discussion.
Thank you very much. I second that.
All right. Any other comments?
Yes, this is Senator Cruz. I just, in deference to President Courtney and Speaker-elect Merkley, putting together jigsaw puzzles can be difficult. And there's scheduling issues and other things like that. I mean, for example, I'm not on this committee during session, but I happen to be on five other committees. So,
You're right.
Perfect can't be everywhere. My hope is that as this committee moves forward, that you folks would consider making patients to the four caucuses as things are moving forward. I think that would be probably a very good way to handle it, because it's not just those of us that have been doing this work, but it's the rest of the body of 90 that need to know about this.
Well said. And, you know, disasters really aren't Republican or Democrat. So, when the disaster happens.
Senator Cruz.
All right. Well, if there's no other comments to be made, I'm going to call the meeting adjourned. And thank you again very much for the call today.
Thank you.
Thank you.